Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inspire Your Day Radio. I'm your host, Deb King, live from Sydney, Australia on Tuesday the 15th of September. And for some of you listening in, and also our very special guest today who is in the USA, it is the evening of Monday the 14th of September. Wherever you are and whatever day it is, thank you for being with me for this hour of inspiration. You've tuned into the right place if living the life of your dreams is of interest, because that's what we like to focus on at Inspire Your Day Radio. Every show we bring fabulous guests, inspiration and opportunities for you to embrace and feel joy and inspired. Ideally, you will take action in some form following this show, so don't be shy. Have a pen handy to write down any insights you get. I am certainly delighted to be here for our second show, as I will be chatting with someone who has not just been inspiring me for many years, but making me smile and giggle on a regular basis through his notes from the universe. He's a best-selling author, speaker, and personal development guru. I am talking about the fabulous adventurer, Mike Dooley. Welcome, Mike. Thank you so much for chatting with me. How are you feeling tonight?
Hi, Deb. Feeling fantastic. Thanks for having me on the show.
That's great. We have quite a few things to discuss. I've got a long list of questions. I just wanted to add that our listeners can ask questions too. If you want to ask Mike a question, you can type it into the chat function, or you can call the US number 347-850-8638. That number would be on your Blog Talk Radio page. So if you want to call in or actually type a question into the chat function, we look forward to hopefully getting to the questions depending on how Mike's time goes. But one question I thought I'd start off with, Mike, I got asked prior to this show by Jill Dowdin. She's a fabulous lady in New Zealand, and she also gets your notes from the universe. She loves them. They make her smile too. Jill asked, what inspired you to create the notes of the universe?
Okay, well, that's a great question because it parallels how to make change in your life, and it parallels so many other things. I had no idea that it would evolve to where it did, but evolve is the right word. And evolution can't happen unless you start taking little baby steps, which I'm big on teaching right now. And the baby steps are difficult to take because so often they seem so paltry. They seem so insignificant. They seem like the biggest waste of time, particularly when you've watched The Secret and you've got champagne and caviar dreams. You know, what's joining Toastmasters going to do for you? What's sending out a free email every Monday going to do for you when there's no light at the end of the tunnel? But yet, if we just take some baby steps, if we just take some humble, mortal action, we don't do it for the ground that those steps cover. We do it to put ourselves in a place of receivership of life's magic. When we take one little baby step, the giant takes 10,000 strides beside us. And when we've got an end result in our mind and we start moving towards it, the players and the circumstances of our lives are literally rearranged like puppets on marionette strings so that we will be predisposed to life's so-called accidents and coincidences, because, of course, there is no such thing as either one of those. And so to get more directly to the answer of your question, you know, 9 years ago, I was at a scary time in my life, and one of the things I started to do, knowing that doing anything was always better than doing nothing, was I started sending out these Monday morning motivators with, you know, kind of my opinion, my editorial, if you will. And it took a lot of courage to do that, and I remember thinking, you know, that people would be like, well, who the heck are you, Mr. Mike Dooley, who I don't even know? Because, you know, people had signed our guest books and our T-shirt stores. That's how I had a mailing list to begin with. You know, who the heck are you, Mike Dooley, to be telling me X, Y, Z? But I remember just thinking, you know, I had very little other alternatives. And I thought, just do it and see how it goes. And immediately, the feedback was warm. You know, there was no dollar signs. There was no light at the end of the tunnel. I was not living the life of my dreams. But it was something to do. People appreciated it. And lo and behold, week after week, I found that I enjoyed writing. And so my weekly, actually it started out as a weekly email, evolved into a daily silver bullet. And both the Monday morning motivators and the silver bullets were from Mike Dooley, you know, which my subscribers didn't know who I was anyway. But it was just from this guy. And I one day, 7 months into this, you know, into this journey, amongst starting other journeys at the same time as well, one day I just kind of felt like, dang, you know, I could say more and from a different perspective if I wrote from the perspective of the divine or God or the universe. And so I did. I just wrote one day, the very first note that ever went out said, your attention please, this is the universe. And today I'll be recording your every thought, word, and deed. No matter how wonderful or not wonderful, no matter how helpful or hurtful, no matter. And in the immediate future, I'll be playing what I record back to you as a manifestation in time and space. Thank you, that is all. I had a kick writing that. I got a lot of great responses in reply. I didn't know it would turn my whole writing into notes from the universe, but within a few months of doing that every Friday, I thought, you know, this is more fun to write as the universe. It allows for humor. People are into it. And so from that point forward, I started to write as the universe. And, you know, it evolved out of just writing as Mike, which was not so much fun, not so popular. Sometimes my net database growth was negative, but it was always better than doing nothing. And one of the funny things or ironies is if I had not written 9 years ago because just writing as Mike was boring, I never would have been able to get to a place where I could evolve and to say to myself, hey, let's write as the universe. If I had had the idea, hey, I could write these messages as if I was the universe, I probably would have thought it was the stupidest idea in the world. It's like, oh, yeah, right, you're afraid to write as Mike, so you're going to pretend to be God or the universe. You know, you've lost your marbles. But again, the magic of evolution is what happens when we take these feeble little baby steps into the unknown. And that's how Notes from the Universe was born. That's how virtually everything I'm doing today started, through some kind of evolutionary process that was not known when I started taking those first few steps. And that's why I kind of use the evolutionary concept a lot when I talk about deliberately manifesting change in your life.
It's a great insight. Thank you, Mike. And I have to say, the notes from the universe are so spot on all the time. They're just, and so funny. So if anyone hasn't signed up, they just go to tut.com, T-U-T.com, and sure, sign up to Notes of the Universe. Your website is looking fantastic, I might say, as well. Has that been updated lately?
Oh, it has. James, it was about a year and a half in under construction.
Okay, cool.
And what's not necessarily obvious up front is that there's an entire community now, and that whenever somebody signs up for the Daily Notes, they have the option of creating a full profile. There's a wall just like Facebook. There's all kinds of bells and whistles, and there's an online vision board, which is really fun.
Wow, okay, fantastic. So that's all at tut.com?
Yep, and it's all free.
Beautiful. So you mentioned The Secret. You were one of the fabulous people on The Secret. How did that come about for you, Mike?
Again, the magic of life, because I took those feeble baby steps. Unbeknownst to me, a TV producer in Melbourne began receiving the notes. And unbeknownst to me, they resonated so much with her, she downloaded the audio version of Infinite Possibilities onto her iPod. And unbeknownst to me, she flew with a crew to the United States to begin filming a documentary on the law of attraction. And as they were approaching the U.S., you know, in a matter of, you know, weeks before they departed Australia, I got the emails and the phone calls from both Rhonda and Glenda telling me of their intentions. And honestly, you know, I get a lot of invitations like that, a ton. But their enthusiasm, their excitement, and the fact that they were prepared to fly all those being interviewed to Chicago, which is something that kind of set them apart from everyone else who wants me to be an investor, I thought, yeah, I'm going to do this. It sounds good. You know, I really like them. I loved them when I met them, and Bob's your uncle.
He is actually. I've got two uncles, they're both called Bob.
Oh my gosh.
That's cool. The Secret was very powerful for many people, including Tracy Woolley, our inspirational director of Inspire Your Day, and for myself and many clients. And I've also noticed that there's a little bit of people that are a bit anti it as well. Have you come across people being...
I think in the United States it's very minimal. You know, the best way to get press coverage sometimes is to come out and say shocking, horrible things about something that everybody else thought was wonderful. And so that's really the only degree that I've seen negative feedback in most of the West. I do know it's different in Australia. It didn't make quite the splashdown there for a number of reasons that I am aware of. That made the press, and that's unfortunate. But I can tell you, in the last 3 years, I've had the great fortune of traveling to about 60 different cities in 20 different countries, giving talks primarily on this kind of stuff. And one thing that the press didn't report on, and is probably not known nearly to the degree that it should be, is that literally in every single country that The Secret was released in as a book or a video, it went to the very top of that country's bestseller list, with one or two exceptions. Every single country, and we're talking about poor countries, wealthy countries, we're talking about Russia, we're talking about South Africa, we're talking about Dubai, we're talking about Ecuador, we're talking about Bolivia. These are all places where, when I was there, I took out my little digital camera and took pictures of street vendors selling bootleg copies of the book and the DVD at red lights, hand in hand with smutty, you know, X-rated glossy magazines. I mean, this evidences the penetration and the hunger that people have had the world over since the year dot for truth. People have literally been dying for truth. Now, whether somebody wants to bash the product, The Secret, or pick an angle that they didn't talk about action enough, or they talked about money too much. You know, I can answer all of those. I don't agree with them. But what's happened with the global embrace of this reveals that it has hit a nerve, and rightly so, with people in every nation. And this speaks to the changes that are afoot right now with the approach of 2012 and the consciousness that's about to flower on planet Earth.
Fantastic. I love it. I agree totally. Talking about you traveling all around the world, Mike, you have a world tour number 3, Playing the Matrix, coming up. Could you tell us more about what that's all about, please?
Sure. When I was this is my third world tour. The second world tour, you know, each tour has kind of a theme and its own material. And the theme or the material for World Tour 2 had 7 sections out of a day-long program, and one of those sections was The Matrix. And The Matrix is a very simple table that I put together that has 6 columns, and it shows from one side to the other the entire spectrum of reality with regard to what we could choose as wanting to happen in our life, from happiness to romance to other people, things that depend on us and our perspective alone versus end results or dreams that depend on the illusions, which is anything defined by time, space, or matter, to the opposite end of the spectrum, other people and other people's thoughts. It's super, super simple, and I'm always a little bit afraid that people will hear of The Matrix and think that it's some kind of quantum physicist's, you know, answer to universal principles. It's just a very simple table that reveals the flow of manifestations. It reveals, if you will, which buttons to press and which ones never to press when you want to create change in your life. And so it was consistently amongst the most popular parts of the day in World Tour 2. And so it just seemed natural to bring it home, spend some more time on The Matrix, create some kind of worksheets that people can follow that are based on The Matrix so that they can define their end result that they can get into the details in this definition of their end result without attaching to them. Big mistake. Happens all the time. And an exercise based on the matrix that helps people understand how they can do all they can with what they've got from where they are every single day, being busy with action while not messing with the cursed hows. And so that's what the day's about. I've done it in a few locations already, and this Saturday I'll be delivering it in London, England, and the following week on a cruise in the Mediterranean for me.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. And I've read that London is one of your favorite places. I love London
out.
Too. I'm wondering what is it that you love about London, Mike?
Well, probably there's a bit of anchoring that was done as a child, because my mother is British, and my first trip to England, I think I was 10 years old or 8 years old, and I always have a sense of kind of coming home when I go to England and when I go to London, and I'm a super proud American, and I think I'll always be headquartered in the United States because of my passion and love for this country, but at the same time, there's a huge affinity I have with London. Now I've been back so many times speaking. I'm learning my way around. I have my favorite parts of town, and I have more and more friends there. So it's, and plus London is London. It's like New York or Paris. It's unique. It's unlike anything else, and it suits me. You know, it's a nice diversion from hanging out in Florida most of the year.
Okay, cool. And so you're there this weekend, and what else to get an overview of the world tour, where would we go to find out when you're going to be in our town?
Well, it is posted under events at the Tut website. There's no other dates that are firm yet for the Matrix after the Mediterranean cruise. London's already sold out. And then the Mediterranean cruise, there might be time to get on the boat. But October and November, I'm doing tours for Infinite Possibilities, promoting its release here in North America. And then December, I've got a couple of weeks in India to speak on a private speaking engagement. And so it won't be until January that the tour starts up in full force. And that's how I do my tours. Basically, I do 2 to 4 cities a month. I hit 2 cities in 1 weekend, take 2 weeks off, hit 2 cities in another weekend. So this tour will last for another 2 years. I will be back probably to Europe at least twice next year. I'll do it again in London because the venue was unfortunately small and the demand was unexpectedly large. So almost a month ago, they sold out of the 250 seats for the full-day program. So I'll be back in London within 12 months. I'll do Manchester. Of course, I'll be down under. I love Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth. I did those a year and a half ago. I'll do New Zealand again. And then, of course, North America, Mexico. Just stay tuned to the Daily Notes, and that's when we announce new city, when new cities are firmed up.
Great, fantastic. And the people down under in Australia and New Zealand can expect you, is it 2011?
I need to see how it all plays out, because the book is doing really, really well, and it could create some diversions, which would delay it to 2011, my arrival in Australia. It'll probably be 2011, most realistically, because I've got Africa, perhaps the Middle East next year, 1 or 2 trips to Europe. So, and I was just in Australia a year and a half ago. So it'll probably realistically be 2011.
Brilliant. There's so many things. I'm really keen to talk about the book, but before we do, you were here in Australia, and I'm wondering what was the best thing, what did you like most when you came to Australia?
Well, apart from it being so exotic for its great distance from North America, I mean, it's truly exotic. You know, most Americans have never been, and it's just kind of fun to go to a place that's so undiscovered by your friends or your family or your peers. But there's much more to Australia than that. One of the most striking things about Australia is, in my view, the people are more refined, more considerate, more hospitable, than my own beloved Americans. I find this is true also in Canada. I find this is true in many parts of Europe, although not as true. And sometimes I find, you know, I find it in unexpected places. But in Australia, it really, really struck me, the kindness and the openness and the just the refinement. Not in terms of, you know, sophistication or elegance necessarily, but in the human personality, it was noticeably different than what I'm accustomed to here and in what I see in many other places. But then there's the climate. Brisbane is just like kind of Miami. Melbourne is kind of like, London. Sydney with the Opera House and the bay and the views just takes your breath away. And last year I went for the first time, or a year and a half ago, to Perth, which is exotic just because it's so far away from the rest of Australia, population-wise. And again, another thriving, modern, flourishing city with great people. So there's a lot I like about your country.
Yeah, I was going to ask for something funny or some juice that happened on your tour here.
Tracy would kill me.
Magic moment. Pardon?
Tracy would kill me if I told you all the juicy stuff. She, of
yeah,
course,
that's what
accompanied
I'm trying
us.
To get from you.
She accompanied us to all of the cities, including to New Zealand. And I brought one person from Orlando, and then in every location we had volunteers, and it was just a fantastic time. As far as any amazing juicy bit,
You can tell us something about Tracy that we don't know.
Everybody knows that she's got a great personality, open-minded, encouraging, and I can tell you what you might not know. You probably know, Deb, but she's really a good friend to those who get to call her friend.
Well,
and
that's
as
that's
dicey
true.
As I'm going to let this go.
Okay, all right. We'll get back to the we'll get back to the really exciting topic, which is your new book, Infinite Possibilities: The Art of Living Your Dreams. I hear it's number two. Congratulations, Mike. Is that correct? Number two.
It was two for a very, very thrilling 36 hours, which is more than an email campaign or a week-long email campaign typically does these days. Normally, you know, if you get you and all of your friends and have a mailing list to shout out about the book, you know, it'll go top 50, top 10, maybe one, but by the next morning it's back down to 78 or something. We were number two behind Dan Brown's new book that's being released shortly. I think it's his first new work since The Da Vinci Code, and he's got a lot of well-deserved success and many adoring fans, and we were not able to bump him from the number one position on Amazon.com. But we did, I believe, get to number one on BarnesandNoble.com, which includes sales in their bookstores, and we did get to number one at Powell's, another partner of ours in this release. And right now it's doing the anticipated slide backwards, but this is because we've put so much into getting my readers to act now, and this is totally expected. As the book gets out there in the hands of people who've never heard of me, I do have a lot of great vibes as to it likely going right back up to the very, very, very top. We may have an announcement this week, too, about some sales statistics that were broken, but I won't go there just yet. We're not sure if that's going to happen. But anyway,
okay.
we couldn't
well,
be more excited.
It's beautiful. Yeah, congratulations. It's such a well-written book and very practical tips on really how to live your dreams. So I'm very impressed, and I'd like to encourage everyone listening to actually go to inspireyourday.com.au to the Inspire Radio page and actually click on the link and buy the book, because it is really great. Buy it for yourself, buy it for your friends. It's the best book you could buy this year. Mike, when did you realize you were actually living your dreams?
Oh, I used to talk about that specifically in my first and second, my first world tour, Because it's not the kind of thing that one night you go to bed and you're not, and the next morning you wake up and you are. There's this, again, evolution is a huge part of it, and things kind of morph around you. I can remember that there was a time when I was telling my mother and brother during the first year of what I was doing, you know, that, you know, gosh, I wish it would break. I'd like to bust out. I'd like things to be happening at a much quicker pace and get more confirmation that they are happening. I mean, much good was happening, but I remember, you know, as much as I advise against it, bemoaning, and, you know, I was with family, and, you know, we all do that. You know, the way the universe is set up, though, there's all kinds of tolerance for that stuff. We are so inclined to success. You know, 5 minutes of visualization and 5 minutes of choosing words that serve you and a few acts of faith a day will blow away 18 hours of moaning and groaning. And that has always been true in my life. But all of a sudden I was answering a question of an audience member during World Tour 1, and they sounded exactly like myself a year or two earlier. And at first I was like, that sounds so familiar. Did I help somebody out with that? And then I was like, oh my God, that was me. That was me saying those same things, wanting things to happen faster, wanting more confirmation, wanting to know if I was on the right path, wondering. And I was like, and then the coin dropped, and it was like, wow, when did things change? And I to this day, I could never put my finger on it. And it's like that. And the fact of the matter is, when things are changing, when you're reaching critical mass, you've reached the tipping point, you very often don't know it. Which means you're still of the persuasion or the mind bent that, you know, this isn't quite happening the way it should. This isn't happening fast enough. Maybe I have some invisible limiting beliefs. Maybe, you know, people could even quit or radically change course when the tipping point had already been reached and they just needed to ride it out a little bit longer. And so I tell people, don't look for the finish line. There is no finish line. Things will gradually morph around you. The most important thing is be doing, at least to the best of your ability, what you most want to do. It might not be your dream job, but anything is better than nothing. So sometimes it's a matter of looking at what your options are and choosing, this is a double negative, choosing from the least of the unattractive options before you. Choose the least unattractive options. Because 9 years ago, I didn't have any attractive options. There was stuff I could do that I could stand or handle or endure better than others, and there were some things that I was a little more gifted at or had more experience with, but none of it was like, wow, do this, sexy path, you'll be rich and happy in no time at all. It didn't exist. So it's like, well, assess what your options are. Look at the best of your options, even if the best one isn't your dream come true. In fact, I would guarantee it's not, as far as what you could do action-wise tomorrow. Look at what your options are and do the least unattractive, and then do it and do it and do it and keep knocking on doors. Don't insist that it be that door. Knock on other doors. I never insisted that I'd be a writer or a speaker, and to this day I don't. My end results are general. They're not detailed. That's what I advocate in the Matrix, and there's a lot of profound reasons why. This allows
the universe... Could you explain a little bit...
Sure, sure.
Explain a little bit more about what you mean by that, Mike?
Well, to me, there's so many reasons, but let me see what comes first. For instance, my end results then and now. People always say in an audience, what are you going to do next, Mike? What do you want to do now? It's like my goals or dreams never change. They never will change, not this lifetime. Wealth and abundance, friends and laughter, international travel, creative, fulfilling work. Universe, you figure the rest out. In the meantime, I'm going to give you stuff to play with by getting busy every single day. I'm going to knock on doors. I'm going to knock on every kind of door that could remotely be appealing to me, that makes sense in my heart and my mind. I'm going to turn over stones, no matter how piddly or tiny they are, and I'm just going to take action nonstop. So universe, that's my part. I've told you the end result, very general. Abundance, friends, international travel, work that I love. Now you figure out the details. And when you give that much leeway to the universe, it's going to happen faster and it's going to happen easier than you could have ever imagined. But you will go down paths that you never could have anticipated ahead of time. And by not insisting on being a writer, although you could, not insisting on being a lawyer, although you could, not insisting on anything, you mushroom your infinite possibilities, how the universe could get to you. Because you're always out there in a place of receivership, even if it's giving free speeches to your Toastmasters club who intimidate the heck out of you, even if you're sending free emails like I did and still do. It's something that the universe can work with, because then somebody like Rhonda Byrne is going to get your free emails and invite you on The Secret, because then somebody in Amsterdam is going to get your emails and see you're talking for free around Florida and invite you to speak there, which is how my World Tour 1 got launched. Because when you're out there, you're within reach. And if you're not attaching to stuff, you're not sweating the details. You're not worried about it. You know what abundance looks like. You can get into the details that describe abundance to you. Imagine the car. Imagine the vacation. Imagine the new home. But don't attach to the car. Don't attach to the vacation. Don't attach to the home, because it might be a better car, might be a better location, and might be in a whole other country. Don't get embroiled in those details. But do use them to get excited about the generalities that you're pursuing. Hand over all of the hows to the universe while simultaneously getting busy.
That is the coolest way of describing it I've ever heard. That's really, really awesome.
Thanks. That's pretty impromptu. Just for you, Deb.
Thanks.
I'm going to remember that, and I'm going to listen to the recording so I can say it again.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? So, that was brilliant. That's like just such the biggest tip for anyone right now, because I think very few people have let go of the hows in such a way.
Well, we're just now coming up with instruction tools to use The Secret, because we have literally been naive to a literal secret since the beginning of time. People have been creating fortunes and disasters since the beginning of time, but not even knowing that they were creating it. Of course, there's been the odd prophet or messiah or seer or author or speaker who has shared these truths throughout all the ages, but generally they were run out of town or worse. But now, the first time in recorded history, with the approach of 2012, not because of the approach of 2012, but it is mirroring what's happening with the consciousness on planet Earth, people are crossing the threshold. We will, as a civilization, cross a threshold that has never been crossed before in recorded history. And that is us waking up to the dream of life mid-dream, discovering that we are the dream weavers of our fortunes and misfortunes, discovering that we are powerful beyond imagination, discovering then that we are divine. This is what explains our power. And then discovering, ultimately, the incredible responsibility we each individually have for our own happiness and our own lives. These are the three phases that are happening with this transition on planet Earth right now. And the more resistance we find, such as we're finding with healthcare in the United States, resistance to change, the more resistance we find happening in Iran right now, the old is not wanting to give way to the new. You know, the more inner resistance, the more outer resistance, turmoil, and chaos we will see. But so much is happening to tell us that perhaps the worst of it may never come to pass, as Nostradamus and the others saw it, because we are waking up to these truths. The secret, there's no words to tell you the effect. Nobody even really knows what it's done to planet Earth. It's been so embraced. I met a woman who lives in a township in South Africa. A township is a very pretty word for absolute slums. And she came to me crying when she discovered I was in The Secret, saying her life had changed so much in the months since she saw it, because her and her friends have vision board parties every weekend with a tin roof over their head. She's never had a stick of furniture in her whole life. Once she put furniture on her vision board, within a week, the charity truck drove up. Her house was the first house, or her one-room shanty was the first one that was approached, and she got it fully furnished. And this is happening. And this shows that, there's an awakening going on that's going to be coupled with a realization of divinity and responsibility, and it could not be more exciting. This is the best time to be alive.
Absolutely. Now, for people that don't know anything about 2012, could we please hear what your view is about that year?
Mm-hmm. Well, you've heard the expression old soul, young soul, new soul.
Yeah.
You know, basically it refers to somebody with a lot of soul experience, if they're an old soul. Generally, someone who has lived probably a good number of lives. Okay, I do believe in reincarnation. It's not exactly as we think, as we describe it, because we're locked into a linear timeline right now, which is all illusion. But we do come back many times, and we do garner experience, and hence the word old soul that's understood the world over. So just as individual souls go through those kind of stages, like the human body does, you know, infant, teenage years, young adults, mature, older years, so does an individual's soul, and so does, if you will, the weighted average, this is a Mike Dooley-ism, the weighted average of soul ages on planet Earth. We're all in this together. There's all kinds of other realities, but we all have far more in common than we realize. We're all going through this stuff generally at the same time, together, the 7 billion people that are alive now and the hundreds of billions that have come before us and that will come, we're all in one family and we're all doing it together. We're all doing it on planet Earth. And in my estimation, we are now going from what I would say is the late teenage years. I rock, I rule, I'm so powerful. Let my parents, let somebody else worry about the mess I'm making. Let somebody else be responsible. Let somebody else pay the bills because I rock, you know. This is the typical teenager's perspective, that somebody else is going to catch them if they fall, because that's always been their experience. But we're now moving as a civilization into our young adult, you know, our early 20s, when all of a sudden we realize that we are responsible for ourselves. And if we don't ask the hard questions to understand the truth about reality, then we're going to continue bumping our heads into the walls in the dark. We're going to continue living literally in the caves, which we still do now, metaphorically speaking, in a spiritual sense. So right now, all of a sudden, we the discovery of our power, divinity, and responsibility don't just happen sequentially. It's all happening right now. And so, as I said, you know, these ancient prophecy makers were uncannily accurate with the general time frame. You know, if something happens on December 21, 2012, I'll be shocked. I don't think any one thing's going to happen in 2012. But this kind of pinpoints the epicenter of when consciousness will be shifting, growing up, accepting new responsibilities that have never been accepted before. No longer is it okay to blame people for your unhappiness. No longer will there be a belief in victims. Not that horrible things don't happen, but victims don't happen. No longer will we be able to make these ridiculous excuses that people have made forever, whether they blame God or Allah or anything else. This is not going to hack it anymore in the years and decades ahead. And the reason, if I wrap this up, the reason that so many of the ancient prophecy makers were able to, well, not were able to, but they tuned in to chaos and global problems is because I don't know if they understood what they saw, but we have options, and if we resist these changes, then there's going to be chaos, and if we don't resist these changes, it'll be a lot easier. And so the ancient prophecy makers, partly perhaps if they understood things to this level, and I'm not at all sure that they do, just as today's fortune tellers don't understand the mechanics, just as they foresaw the possible bad decisions we were making, if they could tune into that, what they also were seeing, very likely, and this comes from the Seth material dictated by the late Jane Roberts. Seth, this entity, said that many of the ancient prophecy makers, looking 1,000 or 10,000 years into the future, We're coming from a place and a life and a time when religion defined life. Religion and life were synonymous. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. There was no question. God was an angry, old, white man with a beard, and you were in big trouble because you were born broken. That was fact. And when they peered into the future thousands of years and they saw no shape, size, or resemblance of their religion in existence, it could only mean one thing. God got so pissed off, he ended life on planet Earth. The plug was pulled, and it was curtains for us bad mortals. Now, that might sound far-fetched, but if I went to the typical Australian or American or Brit, and not to those people listening now, because they probably know a little bit more spiritually than the average mainstreamer, but if we went on the streets in Piccadilly Circus right now, and we had people look into a little crystal ball 1,000 years from today, and they saw no England, totally gone. United States does not exist, neither does Australia. What would their conclusion be? Something bad, really bad, must have happened. Hugo Chavez took over, or the Irans blew up the world, or something like that. Because the typical person doesn't intrinsically understand the beauty, magnificence, and eternalness of life. They don't understand that we're growing up and we're about to enter into this, such a beautiful time that 1,000 years from now, and I bet you this is true, there will not be any countries, borders, or governments. People will be responsible enough to handle their own lives, and people will instinctively reach out and help those in their neighborhood, in their family, and if one person is left behind, everybody is going to suffer. This is where we're headed. But you can see, people looking into the future, not finding the United States of America, would assume doom and gloom. 10,000 years ago, when people looked into the future and didn't see any resemblance of their religion, because it's not going to exist as they know it, they assumed the worst. I don't think that they realized that humankind was going to be making choices. I think they just saw no religion, and this can't be a good thing. Curtains for human beings on planet Earth. So, unfortunately, most people don't understand those kind of things, and so they read the book of Revelations, which was also written at a very dark time in human history that depicted God as an angry, judgmental entity seeking revenge on people. So preposterous, but yet people are still kind of, some people still hold on to that. God said it, I read it, and that settles it, you know? But anyway, the point I'm making is these prophecies were tainted by the prophecy makers, and that's why so much doom and gloom was prophesized. Not necessarily the case at all, although I think there will be some bumps in the road. There certainly already is, as we come to understand our power and our responsibility.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's nice, though, your vision of the future, I think, to remember that that's where we're heading through these times, if it is a bit bumpy, to hold that trust. It's really interesting. Thank you, Mike, for sharing your thoughts on that.
I've got a few
little questions. I'd like to know a little bit more about you. I've been lucky enough to be sent a document which tells me that your favorite fictional hero is Tarzan. Is that true?
I don't know who's making that. No, actually, I think I could answer that one day.
It's not true. Not being written by you.
I answered Tarzan, and it was a long time ago. But I grew up watching Tarzan on the weekends, and he was my absolute hero. Absolute hero. I don't know if it's past lives or what, but the woods, jungles, trees have always captivated my imagination and always made me feel very, very much at home. And to see this guy being was just fantastic. And I still like movies with high ideals, you know. Lawrence of Arabia and some of the others. Ignore that noise if you hear it, please.
Cool. You're such an adventurer, I think. So it seems fitting.
I think it's in all of us. We're all adventurers.
You use some interesting terms that we don't really regularly use here in Australia, and I was wondering if we could get definitions, perhaps in other parts of the world they're not familiar as well, with the word Jambo.
Yeah, that's the typical greeting that we use for Tuts Adventurers Club. Jambo is a term I picked up when I was doing an African photographic safari 20 years ago. I was living in Saudi Arabia. I did a quick week in Africa and again met so many amazing people. And it's Swahili. The word Jambo or Jamba, I think is a better pronunciation, is Swahili for hello, good morning, good afternoon. And when you're in Kenya and you're doing a safari like that, it's just everybody, especially the tourists, love saying hum jumbo, jumbo, jumbo Mike, jumbo Mary, and it was just the most joyful thing. And I have friends to this day who I met on that trip, other Westerners, one of which lives in Sydney now, and you know, the Christmas card every year that we send to each other always starts out with jumbo. And so when I created the Adventurers Club for the Adventure of Life at Tut.com, you know, I just thought it would be a fun thing to kind of add. And so often greetings at the website or in emails begin with Jambo.
Oh, very cool. And the universe often signs off tally-ho.
same kind of thing. You know, I learned later that, you know, tally-ho really only has one meaning. And that means get the fox, you know, to the people who chase foxes generally in the United Kingdom or Ireland on horseback with the hounds. And tally-ho is kind of the commanding word. I didn't know that when I chose it. I'm not enamored of that sport at all. But nevertheless, it's kind of stuck. To me, I just thought it sounded very adventurous, and it would be a great way to say farewell until we meet again, tally-ho. I don't want to go down the path where I'm saying namaste or that kind of thing to other people. You know, it's like, that's not who I am. I don't know what it means, although people can tell me that, as they told me what Jambo means. But I just kind of wanted to kind of go to a place where there was no preconceived ideas of people hearing these fun little words that were being used. They could just be fun.
Cool. That's what I love about you, Mike. Very, very fun and funny. I'm very curious to know, especially when people are living the life of their dreams, what is their daily routine? Are you willing to share with us what kind of things you do on a daily basis that kind of set you up?
Oh, well, you know, I have the same kind of days now that I did 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, really and truly, which, you know, to me, I couldn't be happier doing this. I mean, now the nature of my underlying work is different than selling T-shirts or doing tax returns, tax consulting. But, you know, I mean, I use an alarm clock most mornings. I hurry off to work most mornings, but never until I visualize. I do that every single morning, right after brushing my teeth. And then we've got some fabulous office space in Orlando. I've got a great, incredible team of 5 people. You know, I'm usually there a typical day, an 8-hour day kind of thing, 8 hours of work. And then I come home and have a cigar, sometimes have a beer. When I'm traveling, it's always different because nothing's very predictable then. But much of my life is unchanged, except I understand life even better, and I'm loving teaching as I teach, teaching what I teach. Overall, much, much higher level of satisfaction than when I was doing those other things. But pretty conventional, and that's fine with me. That's my bliss.
Yeah, sure. And with your visualization, is that just 5 minutes, or do you?
Usually it's 4. You know, I advocate, you know, 5 or 10 is the max. You know, I think probably you want to do it for a couple of minutes just to kind of really get in the groove. But yeah, I set a little timer as I talk about and teach, and I just see myself happy. You know, as I've moved along now and achieved so much of what I wanted to achieve, it is funny that now, just by default, I'm so much less interested in the details because I have so many of the details that I once didn't have, you know, and I can see even better how unimportant that they are to the big picture. I mean, abundance is much more important than a nice car. You know, you can have a nice car and not abundance, but when you have abundance, you have the option, you have choices, and so now my end results are those same four that I shared at the top of the hour. And even more than that, more general than those four is happiness. You know, it's just like I don't want to stress. Sometimes I still stress. I don't want to sweat the details, like, you know, when I was creating the material for the new tour or when it was crunch time for the new revisions from my publisher with Infinite Possibilities. It's like, you know, I have challenges, like anybody has challenges, and challenges never go away. I don't want my challenges to go away, but I do want to be able to roll with them even better than I roll with them now. And to me, the one word for all of that is happiness. And so that's kind of what I think about. You know, I think of my normal life now, my normal friends, my normal possessions, my normal activities, but I just kind of see everything. I see myself dealing with it even more peacefully and acceptingly than I do now, because I know that the money and the friends and the travel and all of those things that I was really so concerned about not having, they're always going to be there, and they're always going to be easy. You know, they're kind of the slave to happiness, whereas if you try to put them first, you become, I guess, the slave. I have to think that one out, but you know, if you can be happy, it's been said probably forever, you know, everything else will follow, and it's true, and it's all that matters. And so that's the kind of thing I think about now when I visualize. Not that I'm unhappy.
Wonderful. No. Well, no, I'm getting that you're very happy, and you just keep getting happier and happier, and that's because that's your main focus.
Mm-hmm.
And intention, which is beautiful. You've been interviewed a lot, I'm imagining, Mike, over the years, and I'm wondering what your best or most interesting question that has been, what's the best question that's been asked or most interesting question?
Oh boy, that's a good question. Maybe that's the most interesting question I've ever gotten. You know, I don't think there's any one question I could tell you that that would be particularly interesting in and of itself, but I can tell you that the one answer I give more than any other answer, which kind of speaks to what the questions are, or it speaks to where people are having difficulty, is, you know, probably the taking action thing. It's like you got to be out there. You can't just visualize and wait for Oprah to call or Deb to call. You know, it's not happening until you get out there. And people don't go out there because either they don't understand the nature of manifestation, or they think that the only things they're capable of doing won't matter. You know, if you've got to go scrub toilets or work in McDonald's in the back flipping burgers or be a janitor, that's better than doing nothing, and that will lead you to the yellow brick road. That will bring your kingdom to come. Everything will come to you if you're just out there in a place of receivership, and it'll happen better and easier if you can find peace and joy with whatever it is that you're doing. That doesn't mean that you should be, you know, annoyingly happy to everybody and one of those, you know, kind of artificially happy people at all. No, not. But I mean, every job has meaning and worth. Every job is a contribution. I think work is one of the most wonderful things on planet Earth, and too many people shy away from the concept of work. They think it's a four-letter word, and it's something that they have to do, not that they want to do. And that just speaks to me of a need of redefining it. Call it contribution, call it whatever you will. At the end of the day, it's, in my book, it's still work. But that's a beautiful thing. It's your invitation to dance life's dance, to meet new friends, to be out there and in flux and flow where miracles and surprises and serendipities can happen. And so don't do something with the thought, well, okay, you know, I hear about taking action. or Mike Dooley has told me to take action. So I hope this doesn't take long. Oh, you're doomed if that's your approach, you know. Be happy sweeping the floor, cleaning the toilet. I mean, whatever it is, find joy, and you will become a magnet for more responsibilities at work, more friends. People are going to want to know what your trick is, what your secret is. You're going to be a magnet for the opposite sex or the same sex, whichever sex you want to be a magnet to. You're going to end up being a magnet to money. You're going to be a magnet to everything, things that you can't even imagine, if you will, metaphorically, things that the universe has imagined for you that are so much grander and more shockingly wonderful than you can even grasp right now. This is all what's waiting for the person who can not settle for less, but be happy where they are as they strive to move forward. This is the thing. One of the criterias or hallmarks of consciousness is literally not having everything you want. It's an impossibility to have everything that you want and not want anything else. That's the end of life. That's the end of consciousness. Consciousness, by definition, would always be an expanding thing. And that always means there will be things in your life that you don't yet have. This is a given. It's never going to end. There will always be things that you want that you don't yet have. You could have $1 trillion and be married to your soulmate. There will still be things you want that you don't have. And as you get them, you're going to want something else. And that's beautiful. That's the way it should be. It keeps us growing. It keeps us learning. So the ultimate trick to success and happiness in life is learning to be happy, even though you don't yet have everything you want, because you never, ever will. And so learn it today. It's going to be better than learning it 17,000 lifetimes from now, because you're going to have to keep coming back. You're going to want to keep coming back until you master that incredible jewel and you discover that truth from the inside out for yourself. And so, you know, to any listeners right now, don't be thinking, yeah, once I sell my home, then I'm going to do what he just said. Yeah, once I get rid of this abusive relationship, then I'm going to... No, do it now. Do it while you're in debt. Do it while you're married to somebody who doesn't appreciate you. Do it now. There's no one who has any reason not to do it right now if they're conscious and not experiencing excruciating pain in some hospital ward. Do it now, and it'll be easier tomorrow. It'll be easier when you sell the house. It'll be even better when you move on to a new relationship. Do it now. It's the ultimate lesson. It's the ultimate trick. Literally nothing else matters. Everything else is just our attempt at cursed hows to get to this place of happiness. But you can go there now without having to so-called earn it, you know, in your own mind or in anybody else's mind. Be happy now, even though you don't yet have all that you want.
Wow. Thank you, Mike. That is just amazing insight and wisdom, the golden the key to life. And we've nearly used up the whole hour. Thank you for listening. What are you going to do differently as a result? I encourage you to think about one thing that's really stood out and apply it straight away. We'd also love to hear your feedback. You could definitely go to inspireyourday.com.au and buy Mike's book. There's still a competition, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
And you can register on Blog Talk Radio for our future shows. Our next show is with Rachel Brady this Friday morning, 8:30 a.m. Sydney time, or Thursday evening if you're in New York, 6:30 time, or somewhere over that side of the world. Inspire Your Day Radio has a Facebook fan page. We highly recommend you sign up for Mike's Notes from the Universe at tut.com, T-U-T.com. They're inspiring, delightful, the absolute best. You'll won't regret that. Thank you again, Mike. It's just
thank
been
you,
an
Deb.
Absolutely wonderful hour. Really, we love you so much. We encourage everyone to buy your book at inspireyourday.com.au. There's a couple of chat questions. I didn't run out of time to actually ask you, so maybe we can email you them if you're interested, and we'll see if you want to respond. And, did you have a last comment?
No, I've loved every minute. Deb and Tracy, thanks so much for including me. And listeners, remember, thoughts become things. There's nothing that mitigates that power. There's nothing that can take away your ability to live as you most want to live, being the person you've always wanted to be.
Wonderful. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, and tally ho.
Deb King. Tally ho, indeed. This is Deb King for Inspire Your Day Radio. We'll see you next time. Thoughts become things.
Cheers.
Thank you so much, Mike. That was just brilliant. Really, really appreciate your time, and apologies it's gone a little bit long for you.
Hello? Deb?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. I thought I had hung up the phone, then I heard a voice. No, I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you
every
so
minute.
Much.
You did a great job, and I definitely would like an MP3 of that to share at my website. You recorded
okay,
it, I'm sure, right?
Yes, it's been recorded, and I'm just not sure if it's being recorded right now, so we probably should finish on.
Okay.
But I really appreciate it, and I'll definitely be in touch.
Okay, thanks so much, and say hi to Tracy.
Okay,
bye.
Thank you. Have a great night. Bye.